Hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
Greetings and salutations. Thanks for hitting play on a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. That PhD is in political science. That's why we do this podcast. We are your premier. Yeah, I'll throw it out of there. We're your premier Arizona-based drinking and politics podcast. Yeah. Fact checked it and get to us at Plastic Cup Pod on all of your favorite social media sites. We will jump right into this. I think we're basically going to talk about what everybody thinks we're going to talk about, and that is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But before we get to there, we will say Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, how you doing? What are you having?
Strangely, I'm doing okay, and I suppose that's one of the things that I want to talk about in a little bit. What I'm drinking is a Furious IPA from Surly Brewing Company. They're based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yes, they are.
It says it's an India Pale Ale, iconic, hoppy, aggressive is the three adjectives they choose to describe this drink, and they're correct. It's good. I can tell that it is a good IPA for people who enjoy like super hoppy, bitter IPAs. I'm not one of those people, so I probably won't buy this again, but if you are, it's good.
Remember, Dr. Sean Hayes is like me. He's a non-IPA drinker who drinks IPAs. So the ones that we like the best, maybe not the ones for the IPA people. I'm also having an IPA. I'm having a Road Rash from that brewery. But Surly, I remember it was a big deal when they came into the Chicago market, because I was working at a bar in Chicago when Surly came in, and we had the Furious and their Helles Lager, which was pretty gosh darn good as well. So...
Yeah. So before we jump into RBG, I almost forgot that I promised my lovely wife that I would spend a minute or two talking about the North Valley equivalent of Paul Gosar. And that's a woman by the name of Michelle Ugenti Rita. She's a state house rep, I think. In North Scottsdale, who was either just beaten in a primary or just won a primary to try and run for national office, to run for House of Representatives seat from that district. I'll have to drive over to Scottsdale and take a look at the corners to see which is which, because I'm not going to bother going to that woman's website. It's probably as loaded with malware as you can possibly get. She's a horrible, horrible fucking human being who has organized mask-free parties, going back to school mask-free parties, with so many dozens of families. The school districts that, or the schools that those kids go to, had to issue a warning that if those families attended this party, they would not be welcome back at school when school returns in person next week. Or depending on where you live, actually, different schools and different grades are going back in different orders. She has organized anti-mask protests right here in good old Scottsdale. And she has publicly urged parents in Scottsdale not to get their kids tested for COVID, even if they are sick, because it'll drive the numbers up, and if the numbers go up, then they won't be able to go back to school in person, and all those poor, sick, rich, drunk mommies up in North Scottsdale won't be able to go back to their 10 a.m. rosé. And if I sound like bitter and sort of done with the Karens of the world, yeah, I kind of am. So Michelle Ugenti Rita is, if you took all of the Karens of the world and distilled them down into the veritable essence of Karen, and then infused that into an avatar and shipped it off to the state house here in Arizona to make everyone around its lives miserable, that would be Michelle Ugenti Rita. Fuck you, you dumb whore.
All right. I would like to say, other than my friend Karen Platt, she's all right, but I guess maybe all the rest of the Karens.
Yeah, it's become a thing, right? Like, that's what all the angry white ladies on YouTube are now called, is Karen.
It's really got to – I wonder about my friend Karen. I'm like, man, it's got to hurt a little bit.
Oh, no. Well, yeah, I bet it does. And I know a couple of Karens, actually, who are super, super sweet people. One of them was a colleague of mine over at ASU. Is one of the – not only one of the nicest, but one of the smartest people I've ever met. So not all Karens are what's the – hashtag not all Karens, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. You sounded pretty anti-Karen there for a little while.
No, I'm anti-specifically that kind of Karen.
So, to the task at hand, I took a nap, and I woke up, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg was dead. And that was a pretty nasty nap. Didn't appreciate it. Instantly, Sean and I were talking to each other, and feeling pretty down. I guess we could start discussing the legacy of Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the Supreme Court and move on from there.
All right. So I thought it was pretty funny, actually. I realized afterwards that, like, you and I have gotten to the point over the course of the last couple of years where, A, we assume that both of us are monitoring the news at all times so that when Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies, I can message you with, well, ... fuck. And within a minute or two, you responded knowing exactly what I was referring to. So
yeah, I believe with yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So it's an unfortunate rhythm to have gotten into, I guess. Although plenty of people out there are listening and seem to like it. So cool. Thank you. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, man. Like, when I first heard the news, you know, in the show notes today, through there, coming to you live from the end of the world, right? That's what it felt like in that moment. It felt like, oh no. This is like the worst case scenario, right? First, objectively, that's incorrect. This can't possibly be the worst case scenario. I can, off the top of my head, think of 10 other things that could happen relative to the presidency that would be worse than this. Shortly after hearing about it, though, a lot of the anxiety that I'd been carrying around with me for the last couple of months, strangely enough, went away. And I don't know why. And I'm a little concerned, oddly enough. Like, I'm worried that it's kind of... I don't know how many fistfights you've been in.
None.
Okay. All right. Well, so there's a point just before you're going to get into a fight where you realize there's no way the fight isn't going to happen and you get really calm. You're like, okay, this is what's going to happen now. And I'm hoping that it's not that calm that I'm feeling right now. I'm hoping that maybe after I thought about the consequences of Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying, I realized that not everything has to be a catastrophe at all times. Right? And it's tempting in these times, with these circumstances, to live like everything is a catastrophe. But it's not necessarily. Is this the best possible outcome? No. No, clearly not. But It's not the end of the world, and I think that's important for us to hold on to, and I'll come back to why later in a very sort of personal way. But Ruth Bader Ginsburg, yeah, let's talk about a legacy, right? Even if you're just taking a look at the things that she did just before she died, I mean, it seems like it's probably been almost 2 years now. She's been battling cancer off and on. By the way, how fucked up is it that, I mean, eventually she came around and just publicly acknowledged it, but everyone sort of knew that this woman and her team of physicians were bravely struggling to keep her alive in the face of terminal cancer because she didn't want to die while this person was in the White House. Like, that sets you back a little bit, right? That's a bit of a bummer.
And that her dying wish was in that regard of not wanting her seat taken over before the election.
Yeah. And we'll come back to that here in a sec, because that's a tricky thing to deal with. And Mitch McConnell knew it was going to be tricky when he did it back in 2016. But a large part of the blame also has to rest on the shoulders of the Democrats, who back in 2013 eliminated the 60 vote rule, unspoken rule, right, to clear candidates from a committee out to the floor for a vote. And they did it because the Republicans were blocking absolutely every one of Barack Obama's judicial nominees. And so they eliminated and made it so that, candidates could be passed out of, candidates could be confirmed on a simple majority vote, 50 plus one. And that's coming back to bite them in the ass now. Although a little perspective on that score is also needed. And I was talking to Jen and Phoenix about this earlier today. There has been a lot of anxiety, a lot of heartache over the number of judges that Trump and McConnell have gotten approved. When you take a look at the number that they've gotten approved, it's actually not significantly higher than most presidents get approved. It's a little bit higher, but I think Obama got 146 judges through. Trump has gotten 200 through. So again, this still isn't like the apocalyptic indomining of the federal judiciary that everyone imagines it to be. Where all of his court stuffing gets a little tricky is when we get down to his nominees, which we'll talk about here in a sec. But so she held off cancer as long as she could. She held off a lot of press coverage of her illness intentionally. Again, for political reasons, which is super sad. She has now, of course, succumbed to complications arising from cancer. And man, I tried, so my daughter is a pretty devout admirer of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, has been since she was barely old enough to understand who Ruth Bader Ginsburg was and what she did. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is why Phoenix has long talked about going to law school so that she could eventually, either go the route of a Supreme Court justice or the presidency. We've discussed, of course, being super ambitious and going for both, because fuck it, why not? It's happened before. And it's the old truism, right? Because more than anything else these days, I'm a father. I didn't want my daughter to be sad any longer than she absolutely had to be. So I made a point of not mentioning it to her after I heard about it on Friday. And then I remembered, your daughter has a phone, and that phone has a news app on it, and she reads that news app every day. She's known about this probably before you did. So I went and I had a conversation with her about it. And she said that she was sad. For the obvious reasons that someone is sad when their hero dies. She's also sad sort of in general that the world has lost someone who has accomplished so much. But then she was also sad because she felt like Ruth Bader Ginsburg was our last hope. And that gave me pause, right? So that I had to kind of stop her there and push back on that, because not only is it, it's probably intended in some senses, in some ways as hyperbole. I don't know that she necessarily means it literally, but it's worth taking it literally to prove the point. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg can't possibly be our last hope, because one of her most profound legacies is a legion of feminist lawyers and judges and legal scholars who are all molded in the image of Ruth Bader Ginsburg as a crusading lawyer looking to save women, looking to preserve and expand their rights, looking to finally help the United States live up to its stated ideals, right? That all people are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, right? That is a credo that is worth living up to that we have not achieved yet. We're not there. She fought very hard to get us closer and succeeded. And here's a perverse little piece of evidence of how well she succeeded. Immediately, even a bag of tools like Donald Trump had to announce that he would be replacing her with a woman. Because the work of people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and other women in the feminist movement have changed American politics so profoundly. They have empowered women to become either active as politicians or such an active voting bloc that they have to be taken seriously. And if you took one of the most iconic female justices off of the court and replaced her with a man, it would be political suicide.
Sorry, Tom Cotton. Sorry, Ted Cruz.
The fact that either of them are even being discussed is just fucking gross.
It's disgusting.
Disgusting. Yeah. Hey, maybe next time we record, it'd be worth bringing Phoenix in, because she did a couple of really cool reports about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her life. But she had a profound influence on the shape of American jurisprudence for decades, and it was an influence for the better. It was an influence that was focused on the downtrodden. It was an influence that was focused on the marginalized and the voices that were silenced. Yeah. And the world is a slightly darker place for her absence. But that's counterbalanced by all those thousands of powerful, smart women in the legal profession now following in her footsteps, going into the judiciary, going into politics, right, going into corporate law and bringing a vision of strong ethical behavior into corporate law. It cannot be overstated how important it is that general counsels in the private sector start to push back against some of the sort of the unethical behavior that stems from some of the ideas that have driven corporate behavior for decades now after coming out of the work of Milton Friedman and the other Chicago economists, right, where they talked about the only moral imperative of a modern publicly traded company is to maximize profit. And that is simply untrue. And it has proven to be disastrous for society, for the economy, for capitalism, right? And so this is the role that these women are going to play moving forwards. And it is a source of hope and probably one of the most positive changes that she made in her lifetime.
So I guess we can go directly into fallout.
There are two shortlists, two nominees on the shortlist, two women, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who is on the appeals court in Chicago. She has good academic credentials. She clerked for Antonin Scalia. And as much as I might disagree with him, he was a brilliant individual, and anyone who can manage to clerk for him probably has some decent chops of her own. She's been quoted in a couple of different places as having claimed to admire the very strong friendship that Scalia had with Ginsburg, as sort of an inspiration for how people who could be so profoundly politically and legally misaligned but could still be friends. She is an originalist, right? Which means, as opposed to just taking the text at face value. She believes that the text should be interpreted according to what the authors intended at the time that they wrote it. That's right, folks. You heard me correctly. This woman believes we should still be governing a country in the year 2020 according to the ideas and values of a group of slave owners who wrote a document in the late 18th century. That's not only dangerous. That's not only stupid, it's dangerous, which is one of the main reasons why I would object to the presence of someone like this on the court. But my main problem with Barrett is that she was appointed to the federal court by Trump. She is not a terribly experienced jurist. She was only recently elevated to the appeals court. Don't know that she is the best qualified candidate that could have been put forward, but she would not be a disaster were she to be confirmed. The other is Judge Barbara Lagoa, who has decent academic credentials. She was a state Supreme Court justice for the state of Florida for about 11 months, and then she was tapped by the Trump regime in 2019 to be elevated to the appellate court in Atlanta. She is eminently unqualified for the role she's being considered for now. She would not only be a disaster, she would be an insult to all of the other qualified conservative jurists who could have been nominated. But she's Cuban American and could help clinch Florida for Trump, so she'll probably be the nominee.
I guess we should state that Mitch McConnell did say that they would throw a vote down on this. No matter what he said in 2016, he has said that there will be a floor vote.
Yeah. That's not a sure thing at this point. We've already had two senators, Collins and Murkowski, who have come out and said that they will not vote to confirm a candidate before the election. They haven't said what will happen after the election, but they won't vote before the election. Collins is saying this because she's about to be defeated in Maine. Things don't look good for her, and she's trying to stay in office. Murkowski is saying it because she's not up for re-election until 2022, so she can afford to be sort of edgy, because Republican voters are fucking morons, and they'll forget all about it by 2022, and she knows it. We will probably see... darn it, the Mormon guy with the plastic hair. Mitt Romney will most likely say he won't vote before the next election. There are a few others that could be persuaded not to vote, and that would be more than enough. Since the confirmations are on a majority vote, that means to block a confirmation, you also only need 50 plus one, right? And the Democrats are at 48, 49, something like that.
48, I believe.
Yeah. So even if it were just Collins, Murkowski, and Romney who flipped, that alone might be enough to get the Democrats to 51 to block a nomination. It wouldn't be a sure thing because there are some Democrats who might be under pressure to vote for a Trump nominee if they're in a tight race in a conservative state. I would hope not. That would be unbelievably, incredibly, mind-bogglingly stupid on their part, but there are some who might do it.
Don't worry. Joe Manchin just won re-election in 18, so I think we might be all right.
Oh, yeah. That we might be able to hold on to Joe Manchin then?
Yes.
Yeah, so there is a distinct possibility that this vote may be pushed back beyond the November 3rd election. And then if the November 3rd election goes the way that it looks like it's going to go, which is a Biden victory by a fairly substantial margin, then it's a question of can those senators be persuaded to hold to their word? Because remember, it wasn't just Mitch McConnell who said back in 2016 that the American people should be allowed to have their say before the next Supreme Court justice was chosen in an election year, right? That was the logic that Mitch McConnell offered up. And a bunch of senators, including Senators Collins and Murkowski, seconded that logic, that it was an election year, it was too close to the election, the American people should have their say, and then the next president, whoever that is, after November 3rd, that person should fill the seat. That's what they said in 2016. The question now is, can enough of them be persuaded to honor that commitment to prevent a vote before November 3rd, and then to prevent a vote after November 3rd until Joe Biden is confirmed? There is a distinct possibility that that could happen, but it is unlikely.
Let's go for the local tilt, because here's something that's been upsetting me. Because when Mitch McConnell said the American people should have a voice in selecting the next Supreme Court justice, I'm thinking Arizona maybe should too. And Martha McSally, you haven't won anything. As a matter of fact, we selected somebody else over you, and you were just given the job. And for you to come out and say, we need to vote on this immediately, is such fucking bullshit. How about you stand up as a person and say, yeah, Arizona should get a chance to decide who gets to sit on the Supreme Court. And I will wait until I am actually elected to this public office.
Yeah, I would love to hear her say something like that. It's unlikely. Even if I thought she had sufficient moral character to do something like that, and at this point, I don't.
You see,
yeah. I mean, literally, she just goes to prove that, like, this whole mythology we have around people who serve in the military being these paragons of virtue. She puts the lie to it immediately. Not that it really should need to have the lie put to it. Like, everyone should know that the military is just a sample of society.
People are people, so why should it be?
You and I should get along so awfully. Yeah. So they're just people, and not all of them are going to be good people. And in this case, Martha McSally, despite her service to this country, is not a good person. Of course, she immediately was like, no, fuck the people of Arizona who didn't vote me into this office. I am going to help select the next Supreme Court justice because she knows she's losing. Right. And the one thing that she has going for her right now is a fairly active and mobilized base. And if she were to come out and say, no, I can't in good conscience vote to confirm a replacement for Ruth Bader Ginsburg until the election is over, it would demotivate that base to come out and vote for her. In fact, so many of her followers are certifiable psychopaths that they might actually vote against her for, like, a third party candidate or a write-in candidate. I mean, like, there would be some serious political suicide involved. And it has to get to a point where even if you dislike the person you're talking about, you have to at least acknowledge that, like, they're in a position where they couldn't reasonably. Not unless they were willing to give up on being a United States senator. And you don't get to the point where you are a United States senator, even an appointed one, if you don't have a surfeit of ambition. So it's just unrealistic to expect her to make that kind of a call. I don't think it's going to happen. But she is absolutely going to get trounced on November 3rd. And the interesting part is, because this is a special election, Mark Kelly is eligible to be seated immediately. So if Murkowski, Collins, and Romney refusing to vote to confirm, assuming Romney does come out and refuse, and it seems likely that he will, might be able to actually hold them off until after November 3rd. And if it does, then
it really could hinge on Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, literally the outcome of the Senate race here in Arizona could decide whether or not Trump gets to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the Supreme Court. So people, even those Bernie bros out there who still have, wow. I could not think of an insult that wasn't sexist there for a second. That was weird. Like, just couldn't come up with anything that wouldn't have been horrifying, like sand in the vagina or something like that.
Shit sippers?
Yeah, something like that. Look, even those people who are still like, dude, I could never vote for blah, blah, blah. Like, the ones that I keep fucking hearing, this one kills me. I know Trump is bad, but I can't vote for a guy who doesn't know where he is half the time. Like, first of all, you're buying into Russian/Trump propaganda about Biden, and it's fucking pathetic. I don't even believe that these people are legit, that they're sincere. They're just trying to find an excuse to do nothing. But that one makes me laugh. Like, so the alternatives you're offering here are guy who is actively attempting to destroy democracy, guy who's occasionally sleepy and says something dumb. Oh, I'm just not going to vote at all. I could never fucking vote for that guy. Really? Really? All right. So then what you're saying is you would rather have a 6-3 conservative majority on the Supreme Court than vote for a guy who occasionally gets sleepy and says something stupid. That is fucking dumb. It's childish. It's emblematic of just how immature some of these folks are. Grow the fuck up. Get your ass to the ballot box, because if he gets to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, what it means is the only adult on the court, on the conservative side of the court right now, John Roberts, will no longer be able to preserve the status quo on critical bills. Right. The reason why abortion is still largely legal in the United States is because John Roberts sided with the Democrats to preserve precedent. The conservative wing will no longer need him. They'll be able to form a 5-member ultra-conservative bloc, and we will begin to see weird things where ultra-conservative decisions will be handed down by a 5-4 majority with the conservative, and he is still a profound conservative, the conservative Chief Justice siding with the liberals on the court. This is madness. Shut the fuck up and get your ass in possession of a ballot and fill it the fuck out. Vote for Biden. Do whatever else you want on the ballot, but vote for Biden and then turn it the fuck in.
He was actually very wrong there. Fill in the square for Biden and also fill in the square for Mark Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
This is an Arizona podcast.
Sorry.
There are definitely spaces that I leave blank, but also, let's go ahead and square that one in.
If you're in Scottsdale, fill in the box for whoever's running against Michelle Ugenti-Reed. It doesn't matter who it is. I mean, like, it could say Cujo. It could say that weird robot from that 1980s movie, Black Hole. It could say a lizard person. And still, you should vote for that instead of Michelle Ugenti-Reed. And if you're up in the Paradise Valley, or not Paradise Valley, the Prescott Valley area, we haven't forgotten about you folks. Get your ass to the ballot box and vote for whoever is running against Paul Gosar. It doesn't matter. It could be a rabid beaver. Vote for that instead of Paul Gosar.
DeSantis. Her name is DeSantis. Give DeSantis a vote if you're in District 4.
She unfortunately shares the name with the Republican governor of the state of Florida, but vote for her nevertheless because, and this is important, ladies and gentlemen, she's not crazy.
Yeah, it would be nice to have not crazy in office.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is the legacy. And since you explained to me that Mark Kelly could be seated immediately.
Mm-hmm.
That really does make Arizona a true linchpin in this whole thing. If he can get in there to block the lame duck vote, because you think that these people have scruples enough to not try to lame duck a Supreme Court justice through? The fact that that would put 6 people on the court from presidents who did not get win the popular vote.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Like, and you have to contrast that with their stated logic from 2016, right? That the American people should be allowed to speak before the seat is filled. It's mind-boggling, the dissonance, Mark, the cognitive dissonance that these people display.
There was a split government then.
Yeah.
Not like the House and the Senate aren't split right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I wrong? Okay.
No, you're 100% correct. Like there is no difference in circumstances, Mark. The only difference is that President Obama was at the end of his second term and Donald Trump is at the end of his first. But I mean, look, if we're going to split hairs that finely, then we should look at the political realities at the time. President Obama at the time was wildly popular. President Trump is one of the most unpopular presidential candidates in the history of U.S. elections. Barack Obama probably could have won a third term if the law didn't prevent him from doing so. Donald Trump has, by the way, Barack Obama outright said he never would even bother trying. He didn't want to, wouldn't do it. Donald Trump has said he would absolutely do it if he could. He's unlikely to win even a second term. So if we're gonna split the hairs that finely, right, it still makes more sense for President Obama to have nominated someone 8 months before the election than it does for President Trump to nominate someone 5 weeks before the election.
Yeah. What do you put the odds at on Trump getting the next pick? Getting another one in the basket.
As of tonight, 60-40 in favor.
Motherfucker. All right. Well, the Bears won today, so.
We should talk quickly, though, about what that means.
All right.
So. And this was what I had to explain to my daughter earlier. It's not the end of the world. Even if this plays out the way that it seems likely to. And by the way, the way that it's likely to play out is the way that the law dictates. The violation of the law was back in 2016. If he nominates someone and they vote to confirm that nominee, that is exactly what the law says they should be doing. But back in 2016, Mitch McConnell set a precedent when he stole the nomination from Merrick Garland. And so now people are expecting him to honor that. What's going to need to happen? What will happen? Okay, so what will happen if they confirm one of Trump's nominees to the court is that the court will be pulled dramatically further to the right. And it will make it even more important for sane people to have control of Congress and the White House. So, even if there's no way for Mark Kelly, let's say they nominate someone, fuck it, Collins and Murkowski turn around tomorrow and are like, nah, actually, screw this. We were fucking around. We just wanted to give the liberals some false hope over the weekend. We're totally going to vote to confirm Trump's nominee. Right. And they ram it through in like 5 days. So by next Friday, Lagoa, the Cuban American one, is now the first Cuban American to ever be nominated to be confirmed to the Supreme Court. Even then, having taken away the pressure of needing to vote for Mark Kelly to get him in there to try and stop this from happening, even then, it still makes it incredibly important that we get out there and vote in massive numbers so that they lose the White House and they lose the Senate by an overwhelming margin. That overwhelming margin is important because it prevents them from playing silly buggers and trying to challenge the election. Having them eliminated from office, replacing them with sane people is incredibly important because the Supreme Court is going to be insane for a few years. Right. Let's face it. Clarence Thomas isn't a spring chicken. He's going to die. And he will probably die during the next 8-year stretch for a Democratic president, for President Biden. So we'll get to replace him. That'll start to move the court back towards balance. Justice Alito is no spring chicken. He'll probably croak sometime in the next 8 years, too. And this is the way they're all talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg right now. So I have no shame in talking about them as if they are not real people, because Clarence Uncle Thomas is not a real person, in my opinion. So it is incredibly important for us to have control of Congress and the White House. So please, for the love of God, this is not the end of the world. But it is important. You need to go vote. And you need to vote responsibly. You need to not vote for a third party. You need to vote on a party line. Vote D down that whole ticket. We need the municipal elections to win. So I'm putting the lie to what I said earlier. You called me out on having forgotten to mention Mark Kelly. Fuck it. They're all important in this election. municipal elections, state elections, the federal elections, they are all the elections that are supposedly nonpartisan, which is a fucking joke. You know, they're all important. So please go and vote. Have a strategy for voting. Make sure you get your request your ballot early. And once you get it, fill it out, walk it into a drop-off location and get it into one of those secure boxes. So you know, it will be counted and validated on election day. Do it. Don't leave it to chance. Don't wait. Don't procrastinate. Get your votes in. Vote responsibly. Let's make a difference in November, because our lives might depend on it. It's not absolutely the end of the world, but God damn it, it could be. So let's not fuck around anymore.
Man, that'd be such a great ending to the show if I didn't have one more question for you. It's too bad.
Shoot, I have one more beer.
You want to play a little politics?
I do.
All right. So do you think that the White House should just nominate before the election and then plan to confirm after, so that you have a little bit of a carrot, so you have to dangle to get the conservative voters out? I was discussing this with my roommate, and as opposed to, if you get everything pushed through before the third, then you have the evangelicals coming out to pat you on the back, as opposed to the evangelicals being driven to the polls to make sure that you get another 4 years.
Yeah, that's a tough call. For this answer to hold, the Trump administration, particularly the Trump campaign, would have to have a lot more confidence in private than they're projecting in public. Because this is kind of a ballsy move at this stretch, at this stage of the game. But what I would suggest doing is nominating a stalwart conservative woman, you know, someone from their old Federalist Society list, which is where they get all of their nominees from. And then, yeah, hold off confirmation until after November 3rd. That way you have a very acute incentive for your voters not to sit on their hands on election day, which a lot of them might be tempted to do at this point because of the pandemic. And because you have, because the economy is fucked, and because you failed to follow through on a bunch of the promises you made to them in 2016 and over the last 4 years, there is good reason to believe that some portion of his base has been effectively demotivated. This could be a way to get them back in the game. What I think they will do is rush through a nominee as quickly as they possibly can. Because have you ever heard of the marshmallow experiment?
Unless it involves Ghostbusters, no.
No. Okay. So it was an experiment about the origins of the ability to delay gratification and what that ability meant for success later in life. Right. So the hypothesis was that some of the ability to say no to immediate gratification, to postpone it in favor of something better down the road, was partially biologically determined. And the argument is that the people with the biology to delay gratification would do better in the long run, economically and socially. And so the experiment they devised was to take some kids, and they sat the kids down in a room on camera, one at a time, and they put one marshmallow in front of them, and they told the kid, I'm going to go away for some arbitrary amount of time, 5 minutes, right? If during that 5 minutes, you can choose to eat the marshmallow and you won't get in any trouble, it's your marshmallow. At the end of the 5 minutes, you get that marshmallow anyway. But if you can wait until the 5 minutes are up, I will give you a second marshmallow, and then you'll have two. And then they did some tracking of the kids after that day. And the kids who were able to hold off for the 5 minutes and wait for the second marshmallow had better academic performance overall than the kids who couldn't, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole lot wrong with the methodology of that study. I don't know how reliable it is. But if it's reliable, Donald Trump is definitely one of the one marshmallow kids. Like, he ate that fucker and then immediately looking for ways to steal marshmallows from the other kids. So there's no way in hell he waits to confirm until after November 3rd. Not a chance.
All right. Well, I guess we'll let that all play out and check back in with us. At Plastic Cup Pod is the way to interact with the show. However you're listening, go ahead and hit the subscribe button there. When I get my ballot and you get your ballot, we can probably go over the ballot measures.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Stay tuned for that. And yeah, let's go ahead and keep trying to hold out hope, and we will talk at you again real soon.
Go to the Secretary of State's website. Everything you need to check whether your voter registration is in is right there on that page. They can tell you whether you're registered. They can tell you whether there have been any issues with your registration, like it's been flagged for some reason, either because, you know, you moved and re-registered in a weird way, or, you know, you have a name that makes it sound like you might have brown skin, or, oh, did I say that? That was the quiet part. I wasn't supposed to say that out loud. Anyway, go to the Secretary of State's website, check your voter registration, make sure that it's valid, then request a ballot. Get that ballot delivered to you well before Election Day. Fill that fucker out. Seal it. Sign it. Do all of the things that it says to do. Make sure you sign it in the way that is specified on the envelope. The instructions are right there. Then take it. Go to one of the early drop-off locations and put it in that ballot box. Get it done. Just go. Go and do it. Go to the website right fucking now and do it.
Good night, everybody. You can also mail it in. Thank you. Good night. Whoa!